Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Political Cesspool radio program. Welcome back to our second hour of tonight's live broadcast. I'm your host, James Edwards. Big round of applause due to Keith Alexander for his contributions to the show during the opening hour of tonight's broadcast. Two more hours to come, and believe it or not, they're going to be even bigger than that which you just heard, the Political Cesspool radio program. It's Saturday, July 2nd. We are broadcasting live from AM 1380 WLRM Studios in Memphis, Tennessee, going out to the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network and simulcasting online around the world at thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com. I asked you at the top of the show, are you ready for a blockbuster night of political talk radio? Then this is the show you can't afford to miss. A couple of weeks ago, we dedicated a few segments of airtime to the apostasy that is currently afflicting the Southern Baptist Church. Of course, the modern-day church has become so watered down that many houses of worship seem more concerned with preaching the social gospel of cultural Marxism or political correctness than sticking exclusively to the word of Jesus Christ. Many conservative whites are abandoning the faith of our fathers because they feel as though Christianity is no longer compatible with their political beliefs. But is it really Christianity itself that they are at odds with? Unbeknownst to us, 3 weeks ago, we tapped into an issue that our listening audience is desperately wanting to hear more about. In recent days, I have been literally flooded with emails and letters from fans around the world who are demanding a hard-hitting show that will tackle this matter once and for all in a frank and candid way. Well, tonight, my friends, we're going to give you what you want. We're going to address your concerns. What's healthier, Christianity or paganism? And helping us to navigate these choppy waters tonight will be Hutton Gibson, who will be on with us in a few minutes, and Reverend Ted Pike on later tonight during the third hour. We're going to ask some very tough, in-your-face questions, and to help me do it all, co-hosting with me now, Bill Rowland. Bill, welcome back to the show.
You know, James, it's really good to be the tail gunner once again on a really big show. And this issue of Christianity and the desperate as far as Christianity goes is what you mentioned, that many people are abandoning Christianity for paganism, and that is a dead end. And you know, we certainly want to address that very strongly, but of course the issue is really the apostate church. That's what's causing people to abandon Christianity and going back to the primitive religions of the past. Actually the ancient past and the prehistoric past, and that is not the direction that white Europeans should go. Put this very simply, Europe wasn't Europe until Christianity became Christendom, and Christendom and Europe were the same thing for many centuries. Whenever you talked about Europe, you were talking about Christendom, and that was included, of course, the churches in the East and Russia and Turkey and elsewhere. So Europe has been Christian for far longer than it was ever pagan. Nobody knows how far back paganism goes in Europe, but it certainly had almost come to a complete end in the main part of Europe, France, Germany, etc., by the 8th century. And so for at least 1,200 years, we have been Christendom. Europeans have been Christian. And to throw that aside and say, oh, no, it would be better if we were pagans again, is a fool's errand. And I can explain more about that as we get into the show.
And we will, and I would like to address that specifically, have you, Bill, address an issue. Well, I'll tell you what, let's just try to get in a little bit of it now, and then we will continue on after the next commercial break into the second segment of this hour before we bring Hutton Gibson on. A young lady wrote into the program last week, and this was one of hundreds of emails we've received on this matter. Many of them applauding us for being a pro-white, and pro-Christian show, others saying that Christianity is a weak religion, we should be running from it. We had a very vocal anti-Christian caller, John, last week call in, and because of all of it, we have decided to put together tonight's package. But this is one email we received, Bill, and it reads, last week you had the anti-Christian caller who voiced a lot of opinions that I hear all the time myself, since I'm married to a man who holds the exact same viewpoints. Someone who could lecture on the points he made from a Christian perspective would be awesome. And Bill, that job goes to you. The point she asks you to raise is pagan Europe being converted to Christianity at the end of a spear. This is a point she says that is brought up all the time at her house. Was the pagan culture of ancient Europe romantic and something healthy for whites? And was Christianity forced upon them by brutish methods?
In the first place, I want to ask anybody out there who's considering paganism if they think the Druids, for instance, represented civilization and culture and the advancement of European civilization, when in fact they conducted human sacrifice and all sorts of brutal and backward rituals. And, they worshipped phallic symbols and had sexual orgies and so forth. Many of these pagan cults did that. The answer is, of course not. Now, many will point to Stonehenge and say, oh, what a magnificent achievement. What is Stonehenge compared to Chartres Cathedral or Notre Dame Cathedral or Canterbury, any of these places where Christians built these magnificent structures in places that were once pagan? The history of Europe begins with Christianity. Now, you can talk about the history of the Germanic tribes, and you talk about the history of the Celts in Europe and so forth, but you're talking about a very haphazard history, and one which is based on Roman records. It has nothing to do with Christianity or nothing to do with those people themselves, because they really didn't have a written language, at least not anything we can read today. So what did Christianity do for Europe? One, but the written language to most of Europe, where everyone shared a common language and writing and so forth, based, yes, upon the scriptures. But remember that when the Romans occupied these areas, they weren't interested in their subjects being educated. They were their soldiers were educated, but they weren't interested in educating the populace. Christianity brought that to Europe. And so the culture of Europe, if you begin to look at it as European, begins with Christendom. It begins with the building of these magnificent cathedrals, which the pagans never built. It begins with the writings and Christian writings, which the pagans never wrote down. We're, the worship of Odin and Woden and all of these old gods, they were animistic. They were based on worshiping trees and rocks and streams and rivers. Well, that's what the Africans do. They're animistic religions. The primitive Africans have the same sort of gods. Is that what we're going back to? That sort of glorified Europe that didn't ever exist?
Well, Bill, I'll ask you to hold it right there, and we're going to follow up on this because, there is a lot going on in the mainstream Christian churches these days, God knows, that would drive paleoconservative, healthy white families away from the religion. But I ask again, is it the religion themselves? Is it the gospel of Jesus Christ that they are at odds with, or is it the apostasy and the false prophets that they have issues with? We're going to talk about it all. We are just getting started, only 15 minutes away from Mel Gibson's father coming on, Hutton Gibson, back with us in just a few minutes. Stay tuned.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's dime, toll free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. One of the most important broadcasts, we think, that we've ever brought to the national airwaves, the Political Cesspool radio program. James Edwards here, Bill Rowland co-hosting with me. As you know, Hutton Gibson will be back on our show in the very next segment, just minutes away. He's made two appearances with us. This will be his third. The last time he was on the show, it was covered by over 150 newspapers around the world, as well as numerous television programs such as Jimmy Kimmel Live and Entertainment Tonight. Both times Hutton Gibson has previously appeared, Bill Rowland has been with me to co-host and interview Hutton, and tonight is no exception. And Bill Rowland is joining me tonight. Bill, before we bring Hutton on, and, you know, I talked to Hutton today. I talked to him at length for a long while earlier this week, and he is going to bring some interesting perspective to the show this evening. You know what we're going to be talking to him about, but before we get to Hutton, there's a couple of other things we're covering tonight, Bill. You know, being a leader in this movement, Bill, and being a co-host of the Political Cesspool radio program, you know that there is a clique out there, I guess would be the best way to call it. And I don't mean that in a demeaning way, but a lot of very good people seem to be re-embracing paganism or adopting neo-paganism. They look back at pagan Europe as a time when whites were healthy and you know, they had it all going for them.
Well, so
and they want to re-embrace that. At the sake of Christianity, and of course, this is something we're here to talk about.
Comic book religion of paganism, and they've been reading too many comic books about Thor and Wotan and all that. First of all, one of the pagan chieftains of Germany during the wars with the Huns, turned his daughter over as a peace offering to Attila the Hun. That doesn't sound like racial consciousness to me. Racial consciousness as a groupthink, as an attitude among people of a common heritage, was brought to Europe by Christianity. It was this that united the Europeans around certain ideals that they never held in common before.
Yeah, you know, Bill, and you know, I'm with you on all that, and I agree. But one of the things we will hear from a lot of these people, and don't get me wrong, these are good people. These are people who support our show. You know, we have a lot of Christians who support our show, and I would say the majority of our listeners perhaps are Christians, as we are. But there are a lot of good people, you know, a vocal minority that support this show that are raising their eyebrows at Christianity because they see a lot of the weaknesses that is manifesting itself in the apostate church, things that we've been covering the last 3 weeks. How do you reconcile that?
James, the Bible warns Christians that ravening wolves would mislead and would deceive congregations, deceive the faithful. And so that's what we're talking about in the churches now, are the ravening wolves who do not represent and are not Christian in what they teach and what they preach and how they pray or their beliefs. And so the problem in the church is not Christians. The problem in the church is allowing a hierarchy or a preacher or an influence to take over the church and mislead it and lead it in away from Christ and away from the true faith. And I fully understand the frustration of those people when it comes to what the church has become. But that's judging a congregation and a preacher and saying you are misleading you are leading people away from the truth is very different than rejecting the Holy Spirit. And that is where the error is. We are fully, fully in agreement with Christians and anyone who says the church is going the wrong way. You're right. And it's not just the Baptists. It's the Presbyterians, the Episcopalians. These churches have adopted structures that have allowed those churches to be led down the path of apostasy and heresy. And, you know, I want to say something, James, very quickly here. The PCUSA, Presbyterian Church USA, recently held its conference, its convention. At the convention, they passed a ruling or a resolution which allows non-celibate homosexuals to become pastors, to become ministers. Well, they also invited a Russian Orthodox priest to address the PCUSA convention. And this priest, whose name was Reverend Siahar Hardun, got in front of the congregation. This assembly of the convention of the PCUSA, and he stood up like a Christian. He showed Christian courage, and this is what he said. He said that by passing this rule that non-celibate homosexuals could become pastors, he said, you're trying to invent a new religion, a sort of modern paganism. He went on to say, when people say that they are led and guided by the Holy Spirit to allow homosexual priests, I wonder if it is the same Holy Spirit that inspired the Bible. And ultimately, he said that the Orthodox Church was unbroken, unchanged, and unreformed in tradition, and that the Orthodox theology had never been changed or reformed for almost 2,000 years. That is true Christianity.
Well, let me ask you this, Bill.
For true doctrine and for the scriptures. And he did this in front of what should have been a hostile crowd. Well, what was the effect of his speech? Is that in the rest of the conference, one of the other measures that was attempting to be put into place was affirming homosexual marriage. That didn't pass in the PCUSA convention. So the courage of this Russian Orthodox priest to stand up for the true faith is an example of true Christianity in the face, directly in the face of the apostate church.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of the things that the detractors of Christianity are at odds with are things that we are at odds with as well, although we're not forsaking Jesus Christ as a result. But a lot of the things that they have issue with didn't really manifest itself in the church in a big way, in any denomination, until the last 50 or 60 years. So this is relatively recent history we're talking about. But I'm going to ask you two questions, and I'm going to ask this question of Ted Pike as well during the third hour after Hutton Gibson appears. We only have a couple of minutes before we have to get to Hutton, so you'll have to be quick. Two of the biggest things. You know, here recently with the Southern Baptist Convention and the Southern Baptist churches, they are really trying to diversify their congregation. Can you be a racial realist and still be a Christian? I think this is a question many people ask if they base their opinion of Christianity upon the
yourself,
modern church. And can you be aware of Jewish power and influence and still be a Christian?
Honest with yourself to be a Christian. And it's the dishonesty with this regards to multiculturalism, which is just the Tower of Babel. They're reinventing the Tower of Babel. And the Tower of Babel certainly was not a holy place in the Bible. And the thing is that when they build these Towers of Babel, they inevitably will fall, and they'll fall into confusion just as the Tower of Babel fell. So let them pursue this false doctrine. Let them pursue these heresies, and they'll find out the hard way that they don't stand up any more now than they did 3,000 years ago.
Well, I guess that's the most direct answer anyone could give on the matter. So I guess the answer to the question is yes, you can be a Christian and not go for all of this, all of the trimmings that come with the modern-day churches. And you have to
be a racial realist to be a Christian, just like you have to be true to yourself to be a Christian. And the falsehoods around race were created by Marxists and cultural Marxists and have no place in Christianity at all. So
well, Bill,
anyone who embraces them embraces cultural Marxism.
Bill, we're going to be hearing from Hutton Gibson after this next commercial break. The time is upon us to take that break, and Hutton Gibson is waiting in the wings. So I talked to him about, 4 or 5 hours ago, and he seemed spry and ready to go, as spry as a mid-90s person can be. And I tell you, Hutton is still leading the way into his 90s. And if I'm alive in my 90s, I'll consider that an ultimate victory. But if I'm alive and as lucid and as powerful as Hutton is in my mid-90s, well, I'll tell you, that is a blessing to be sure. Hutton Gibson with us right after these words. Stay tuned, everybody.
Don't go away, the political cesspool guys. We'll be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. Big girls
don't cry. Big girls. Okay, welcome back to the show, everyone. It is my understanding that we now have Hutton Gibson on the line, although he has put our producer on hold just for a moment. So, Bill, you know, you've been with me the last couple of times we've had Mr. Gibson on. Always a big show, and he always has something to say, and I have it in my ear now that he is with us now. Hutton Gibson, an author, World War II veteran and former Jeopardy Grand Champion. He is the father of Academy Award-winning director Mel Gibson. After spending 3 years in the seminary, Hutton has dedicated his life to defending the faith of our fathers, and wouldn't you know it, that's exactly the topic that we're here to address this evening. Hutton, welcome back to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, we're doing very well. Anytime we have you as a guest, we couldn't be better, as a matter of fact. And I know Bill Rowland, who has interviewed you twice with me, would like to say hello as well. Bill?
Yes, good evening, Mr. Gibson. So good to have you on the show.
My home away from home.
Well, we certainly feel it.
That's right. You seem to make a pit stop here once every year. This is your third appearance with us in as many years. And we're excited about it. You know, Hutton, you and I had a very good conversation earlier this week. We addressed a number of topics, and I told you what the goal of this program was tonight. We wanted to hold the apostate church accountable for its actions and at the same time encourage the listening audience not to abandon the true gospel of Christianity and the gospel of Jesus Christ. But a lot of people are shaking their heads, Hutton. They are witnessing what's going on in the Catholic Church, which is what you're on to talk about tonight, and they're finding it hard to reconcile the actions of the modern-day Catholic Church with Christianity, and they are forsaking the faith. I read now from an article that I pulled from the Associated Press, I believe. It talks about outgunned opponents. And it reads this, Hutton: "It was befuddling to gay rights advocates that the Catholic Church, arguably the only institution with the authority to reach to derail so-called same-sex marriage, seemed to shrink from the fight last week in New York as the marriage bill hurtled toward a vote. The head of the church in New York, Archbishop Timothy M. Dolan, left town to lead a meeting of bishops in Seattle. He did not travel to Albany or deliver a major speech in the final days of the session. And when he did issue a critique of the legislation, he did it over the phone to a radio program. So as one of my listeners, Hutton from Colorado, writes, even the homosexuals couldn't believe in the ineffectiveness of the Catholic Church. They just phoned it in. What's your take on that?
This is typical. I mean, we have not had a Catholic in a diocese for years. Not, that is to say, as a bishop, and nor have we had a pope that is a Catholic. We have a conspiracy which is out to kill the church. And so, the only way you can figure it, these people know better. They have to know better, and they never say a doggone word. It reminds me of what happened when they were discussing abortion one time in the Australian Federal Parliament.
Right.
And you know what our great Cardinal Freeman told them? It's a crime against democracy. Oh, the devil is democracy. Of course, it's a crime. It's a crime against the taxpayer is what it is, because that means there's nobody around to pay the taxes and keep it up. So it's going to go broke eventually, if they haven't robbed it blind already. So it's one of these things. They're out to get us, and they have gotten hold of the means to lead us, supposedly. And they are disgusting people, right, left, and center, so that they're likely to leave. And It is just that they want to see us all out. But at the same time, they won't argue with us.
Well, Mr. Gibson, it seems that this is more evidence of the power of homosexuals and within the church. What exactly is their power over the Catholic Church? And this includes Protestant churches as well.
Well, they got their people in the seminaries. They've been in there for years. They make it almost impossible for a straight man to go through the course. They're just, you can almost bank on it. You see a man, if he's wearing a clerical costume, that's what it is, a costume. You wouldn't want to talk to him ordinarily.
Well, and you're talking about here, Hutton, members supposedly of your own faith. And I can certainly relate to the lamentations that you have.
They're not of my own faith. If they were, they wouldn't be homosexual.
Well, that's exactly right. Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, they are imposters to the faith that you and I accept and embrace as our own. And to see this manifesting itself in the church that we have called home and that so many of our people have called home for generations is certainly something worth standing up and fighting against. And, you know, they have been trimming their sails and moving the line in the sand back for so long. But I always thought, my God, if there is one thing that is so explicitly forbidden in the Bible as homosexuality, surely they will not shrink from that fight. Surely they will have the courage to stand up against that, if nothing else. And even now, we see, no, they won't, and they're not. And I know in a previous interview with us, Hutton, you said that this could be a result that the Pope himself is a homosexual. Do you think that plays in to what's going to what's in play in New York and elsewhere?
Well, he's certainly been protecting them for years, and it was his job to root them out. They had about 15,000 cases he was looking into, and over a period of about 8 years, he got to only 3,000 of them. You would think he would be able to get several more people to listen to the thing and look, go through it, another court or another investigation, another five of them. They might have caught up with it. But this is, as I say, this is deliberate. And this is one reason for the bishops' conferences. No bishop will get up and say anything anymore. He's got to wait for the semi-annual bishops' conference so they can all vote on what they are going to say, what they are going to say. The man that's in charge of a diocese, especially where he should get up and talk, never says a word. He's afraid to. He hasn't consulted his doggone conference, which is another innovation, and innovations are anathema.
Bill, back over to you.
Well, Mr. Gibson, do you feel that, I understand what you're saying about the seminaries, and that's absolutely true. I've heard that from other good pastors in other denominations, that the seminaries are absolutely infested with all kinds of heresy and apostasy. Do you feel also that there is a political motivation here, that there is a monetary motivation, financial motivation, that the churches are straying so far away from the truth and the true doctrines of the Scripture, or is it really just coming from the seminaries and from the twisted minds that are entering the seminary?
Well, the twisted minds are entering because they let them in. There's twisted minds letting them in the first place, and twisted minds supplying the courses, so they never learn anything. And but all they do is get in and take over and get paid, as though they were real priests. Most of them are not, because about 1969, they put in a new rite of ordination. Now, sacraments, by definition, are instituted by Jesus Christ to give grace. And no man-made thing is going to prove that it was instituted by Christ, and it certainly can't give grace. So these people have not gone through the proper, never mind the proper training, they haven't gone through the proper sacrament. They have no status whatsoever in our church. But people don't seem to realize this. They have to come to the conclusion that they're out to get us, and that's all there is to it. And, of course, this means get us every way, financially, civilly, religiously, and just let's wipe out religion, or let's have one world religion.
Well, don't you... Mr. Gibson, don't you think...
Bill, hold that question. We're going to get back to you at the top of this next segment. We have about 10 more minutes with Hutton Gibson remaining this evening, and we want to take full advantage of that. But first, we've got to take a commercial break. Stay tuned, everyone. James Edwards, Bill Rowland, and the Political Cesspool continues this night with our featured guest, Our friend and yours, Hutton Gibson. Stay tuned. Right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Hutton Gibson, our featured guest this evening. You've been hearing from him in the over the course of the last segment. Bill Rowland has a question for Hutton, and we're going to get to that directly. But first, you know, we're talking tonight about two things. Number one, a lot of the problems that are plaguing the church that good people rightly have issue with. And secondly, is it Christianity and the gospel of Jesus Christ itself that they are at odds with, or is it just the apostate church? And addressing this matter from a Catholic perspective, of course, Hutton Gibson, one of the big issues right now facing all of us, and Catholicism in general, is the topic of homosexuality. And we saw once again the Catholic Church perhaps having the might to derail so-called homosexual marriage in New York, and they shrank from the fight. Hutton addressed that during the first segment. You have to reason that perhaps the Pope himself is, in fact, a homosexual to allow this to occur without more fight from him on the matter. Hutton, in your last appearance with us, you also talked about satanic influences within the Catholic Church. Do you think that's still prevalent?
Oh, certainly. You've got to give the devil his due. He's not stupid. At the same time, he can't take us over if we won't go. There is no reason to shop our faith. We have to keep it and maintain it because that's our ordinary means of salvation. And if we are unable to practice it due to circumstances, we can't. That's all there is to it. But we can't go and join something else in search for it. We can't join this new church, which is not a church at all, but an anti-church.
Mr. Gibson, are there any Catholic churches or any Catholic leaders who are holding to the true faith, who do represent the true church right now? Anybody prominent in the Catholic Church who is standing up for the true faith?
There are a few. Mostly they were Eastern Rite. See, they took over the Latin Rite first because it was the most extensive. And without the Latin Rite, people were being driven to other rites. People would go to the Ukrainian or to the Melkite or the Maronite rites or to the Chaldean or even the St. Thomas Christians in India.
Well, you know, Mr. Gibson, this brings up an interesting point because in the first segment I pointed out that a Russian Orthodox priest who addressed the Presbyterian Church USA conference actually rebuked them for embracing homosexual or approving of homosexuals in the pulpit, and he apparently derailed the attempt for them to sanctify homosexual marriage. But he gave a very strong rebuke to them and even called them pagans trying to invent a new religion. Is much of the hope for Christianity now in the East?
A good deal of it, yes. They're more likely to have orders. They will have real priests and bishops because they were behind the Iron Curtain and Rome had nothing to do with them for a while. The only thing Rome did was betray them, like John 23rd. He wanted representatives of the Russian Orthodox to his damnable council. And so to get them there, he had to agree to have nothing said against communism by that council. And we had only three real problems: that, contraception, abortion, usury, and homosexuality. And the council handled none of them. deliberately. They took it right out of the council's hands, and Paul VI was going to set things straight. And he almost did what he intended to do then, but he was persuaded that it was too early in the piece. He couldn't get away with it then. So he put out this couple of things, as Populorum Progressio and this other thing about the contraception. And it had all been said before, better. And pretended that that's what was to be used. He weakened the system. He weakened the argument.
In other words,
at the same time, kept his disguise on as far as possible.
So he flinched in the face of communism, one of the worst enemies of the church.
He didn't flinch in face of it. He was one of them. Same with John 23rd. John 23rd's favorite line, when somebody'd say, well, we got this trouble with the enemies of the church, he would say, the church has no enemies, which is ridiculous. We've had enemies from the absolute beginning.
Amen to that.
So, anyway, the thing is to hang on to what we know. As if we can't practice, it's too bad. We look around for chances. There are all kinds of groups out there that will give us chances, which most of them are not worth looking at. Like that Lefebvre group, the Society of St. Pius X. They have a battle going now between three of them who are making overtures to the Vatican and talking to the Vatican, and one of them who is opposed to that. He said something about the Holocaust, which doesn't go down, and that's on purpose. He's not any friend of ours either. He's just trying to hold on to the members of his society's support who will not go along with dealing with the Pope, so-called. So this way they don't get off out of the control.
Well, you know, Hutton, we got a lot of people listening, and they share many of the concerns that you and I do. And they're looking at the church, and they're seeing it as weak in many of the fights that they hold dear, weak in the fight against homosexuality, weak in the fight against so many issues. And they're thinking and considering abandoning their faith, writing off Christianity, writing off Jesus Christ. We have listeners tonight who are right there at that precipice. What would you say to them?
Well, where are you going? The only place we can go is back. If you go forward from there, go some other place, you're just that much further away again. You do what you can. You say your mass prayers at home on Sundays. Or if you have a priest that will say the mass for you, you go there. But you got to be sure that he's a priest. And the Lefebvre's are not. And the Lefebvre, he kept things going all the time. When he was just about to die, then he let go of what he considered his monopoly. Until then, he wasn't even considering putting out bishops for the general public.
So essentially, hold the false priests, hold the false pope accountable, but don't forsake the gospel of Jesus Christ as a result of their actions. That's what you would encourage.
That's what I would encourage, yes.
And Bill, a final word from you, and perhaps a final question. We have about a minute or two remaining.
Well, the final word I would say is that when it comes to this movement of paganism, that Europe began to crumble, began to be driven to its knees when it got off its knees in worship of Jesus Christ. And now it's being driven to its knees by multiculturalism and confusion and false doctrine. And Mr. Gibson, my final question to you is, What is your prayer for people who are being misled by false doctrine and falling back into paganism?
Well, examine the situation. Look at it realistically and notice that everything these people in charge do is anti-Catholic, anti-religion in general, anti-human. They're useless people. They're out to steer us the wrong way, to push us over the edge. And, as I say, they will not argue with us. I have been trying for years to get them to excommunicate me, and they have to show cause.
Well, hey, listen, Hutton, I tell you, stay in the fight. You are a inspiration to us and no doubt many others. We're thankful that you have appeared with us again tonight, and hopefully it has done some good. I'm sure that it has, and we thank you for your endorsement, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Okay, have fun.
On behalf of Hutton Gibson and Bill Rowland, that concludes tonight's second hour of the Political Cesspool Radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards, but stay tuned, everybody. We are not half done talking about this issue. Reverend Ted Pike will join us in just a few minutes to pick it up from a Protestant perspective, and we're going to hit him with some really tough questions. You're not going to want to miss it. Stay tuned, everybody. The Political Cesspool continues on the Liberty News Radio Network right after these words.
They call the ride.